This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyi. Today, we'll be discussing how we can safely reopen schools. As we all know, schools are set to reopen in stages, beginning from the 1st of March with preschoolers, Standard 1 and 2 students, while SPM students do continue taking their examinations, of course, which started this week. The announcement about reopening of schools has been met by both relief and concern by parents. On the one hand, children are finally able to return to school. On the other hand, the question remains if it's safe to do so when the number of COVID-19 cases are still high. So to weigh in on this issue on how we can safely reopen schools, joining me today is Dr. Hang Liang Chu, President of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association. How are you today, Dr. Hang?
Good afternoon, Xiaoyi. Thank you very much for inviting me to join BFM this afternoon to talk about school reopen. I'm fine and I'm at home.
All right.
Obediently,
okay.
Abiding to the MCO's order.
That's good to hear. Thank you so much for your time as well. But a quick call out, if anybody has any questions they'd like to ask, you can call us at 03-7732-900. If you prefer, you can also WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll try to get Dr. Hang to answer your questions and concerns. Now, Dr. Hang, it's been more than a year of dealing with COVID-19 here in Malaysia. We have heard of some cases of COVID detected among students in schools, but actually, on the whole, how often do outbreaks or transmission happen within schools?
I think before we start with schools, let's talk a bit about COVID to put things in perspective. So we know that COVID-19 or coronavirus disease, it is an infectious disease caused by a newly discovered virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And this SARS-CoV-2 virus spread primarily through the droplets of saliva when a person talks or sings, or discharges from the nose when the infected person coughs or sneezes. Mm-hmm. So most people infected with COVID-19 so far, we know that they experience mild to moderate illness and recover without required special treatment. Mm-hmm. Older people and people with medical conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, chronic respiratory disease, cancer, obesity are more likely to develop serious illnesses. So it is now 1 year down the road that we have COVID-19. So we have some current available data. And we know that COVID-19 is less common in children. And for children, most of them are asymptomatic or only have mild symptoms. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for our experience in Malaysia, for children less than 12 years old, these are the children that are considered, these are the definition of children in Malaysia. So the Sungai Buloh Hospital experience is that there were only a total of 3.5% of the total COVID patients were children. Mm. And 90% of them were in stage one. Mm-hmm. That means they are actually asymptomatic or very mild. Mm. So, and we know that most infections in school were from the community and not through school contacts. So that's what we know. Right. And then the risk of death for children is actually very low. So for children, let's say, this is the American data, that children 5 to 17 years old, the risk of death or mortality rate is 1 in 9,000 over cases. So for an old person, let's say if you are more than 65 years old, the risk is 1 in 23. So it is very high in older people. So as school were to reopen, how can we ensure that it is going to be safe? We know from other countries, reports from Europe and reports from US, where they actually reopened schools in the summer and autumn of last year after the second wave, that they do experience school outbreaks. Mm-hmm. There's reports from Israel and say that there were school outbreaks and school children, especially the secondary school, 12 to 18 years old. And this is because they did not follow the mitigation measures or strategies such as wearing of mask, social or physical distancing, and then washing of hands, cough etiquettes. And these are the important things that should be followed. And in this particular Australian school, they actually held sports as well, okay? Group sports. And they actually went out for dinners in groups as well with their trainers. And that's how the infection spread. So if schools were to follow a safe delivery plan for in-person teaching, which is going to start, as you say, in March and April for various schools in stages, we should ensure that schools are reopened as safely as possible and it will remain open to achieve the benefits of in-person learning.
So when,
and other things like school meals that we gave to poor children.
Yeah, so that's one of the concerns that were raised when schools were closed for such a long time, that you had lower income students who were unable to access those kinds of programs that helped families quite a lot. But coming back to, you know, if we can reopen schools safely, right? So what would that look like? I know you talked about the wearing of masks, and I know you talked about countries where, you know, school outbreaks happened because they had group sports and things like that. So then for us here in Malaysia, what do we need to ensure to reopen schools safely?
Ministry of Education has actually produced a very good Garis Panduan, which is now in the second edition. It is the Garis Panduan Pengurusan and Pengoperasian Sekolah dalam Norma Baru Edition 2.0. And this is a very extensive and comprehensive guidance of school reopening for all various types of school, from kindergarten to primary, secondary, government school, private schools, boarding schools, and all the guidelines were there. So it is important that schools of various types, they should follow and implement the guidance that is produced by our Ministry of Education. So now the issue is to enable schools to open safely and remain open, they have to adopt and consistently implement this recommendations from the Ministry of Education to slow the spread of COVID-2 virus in both the schools and also in the community. It has been shown that if schools are to follow it, then the risk of getting infection is much lower. It's just like in the community. So how should a school actually implement this kind of strategies? So the first is masking. So there should be a lot of organization to be taken place before the school reopens. So that should be committee set up that involve the students, representative, the teachers, the parents, school administrators, as to how the pathway of the whole thing, the process of doing it. So let's talk about masking. That's the first thing that it must be done, which is very important. Everybody that comes to the school must have universal mask. That includes students, teachers, all staff, administrating staff, canteen operators, cleaners, gardeners should have masks on all the time. And you should only take down your mask for certain reasons like eating and drinking. And the correct mask should be used. And the students should be taught how to correctly put on mask, take off mask, and wash hands before, after, not to touch the front part of the mask. So that's number one. And number two, all this group of people should be involved in the arrangement of physical distancing. This physical distancing, number one, involve the school classrooms. So the school classrooms have to have at least each person, one table, there's at least 1 meter apart in our country. So they have to ensure that meal time, break time, has to be staggered, and also staggered scheduling of school arrival and drop off, so there's no congestion at the screening area, the My Sejahtera area. So, and if the school has better facilities, they can actually cohorting the student and teachers and podding them so that there is no exposure across school environment. That means it's easier for contact tracing in future. So that's number two, the physical distancing part. And then the hand washing, that the school should have facilities for hand washing, that there should be physical distancing. And then the children should be taught respiratory etiquette as to how, what should they do when they cough. They should cough into their elbow, or when they sneeze, they should sneeze into their elbow. And then the classroom should be well ventilated.
Mm.
A lot of our classrooms may not have good ventilation. So there should be fans to ventilate. All windows and doors should be open. At the same time, children should be kept safe. Air conditioning is discouraged. In the Israel instance that I shared with you, there was heat wave, then they use air conditioning. So the air is actually recirculating inside. So these are the important physical structures that need to be put in place before the school reopens. And if it involves the parents and teachers and older students in the process of preparing, then they are more confident. And so you build trust and confidence. So parents feel safer to send their children to school.
Mm. So that process should begin now if it hasn't already, right? Dr. Hung, I do notice that with younger children, that some parents let them wear the face shields instead of the masks. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
All children 6 years and above should wear a mask. For children with good health condition, that means they do not have medical conditions, then they can actually wear a non-medical mask or a fabric mask. And this mask can be washed and it can be reused. So children should have at least two or three masks to take to school so they can change if it's damaged or if it's soiled.
Mm.
So, and masks should be worn properly. Children should have a correct size mask. It should cover the nose, the mouth, and the chin.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a function of the mask. For a face shield, it covers the whole face. It covers the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, but it's not enclosed. So it is actually open. So for a face shield to be effective, it should actually cover the side of the face as well as the chin. So face shield is not recommended for children who are healthy, in good medical condition. But for children with disabilities that they cannot wear masks, they have no capacity to actually wear masks, maintain masks, and take down masks if they feel that they're suffocating, then they can be asked to wear a face shield. But for general purposes, all students should be wearing a non-medical fabric mask.
All right.
For children with medical conditions, that let's say if this child is having chronic asthma or is immune compromised, then these children, let's say the child has bronchial asthma and severe, so if the child will get severe COVID-19, it could be severe, then these children should be encouraged to wear a medical mask. So in consultation with their pediatrician or doctors, then that this child should wear a medical mask rather than just a non-medical mask. So this should be consulted with the doctor in charge of the patients.
But is it safe for them to go to school in the first place?
So that is the reason why they should consult the doctors first and see if it's safe for them to go to school with a mask. And if they go to school, they should wear a medical mask, which is, we actually protect them from getting the infection as well as prevent the spread of the virus.
Absolutely.
So if this group of children is advised not to attend school even with a medical mask, then this group of children should be provided with virtual teaching. So, and then there's another big issue that we need to discuss about virtual teaching.
That is, because you will need to, because not all schools will be able to manage this sort of hybrid form of teaching to accommodate students who can't go for in-person lessons. But you're absolutely right, Dr. Hung, that's a whole other conversation. Today, though, we are discussing how can we safely reopen schools, which will be happening very soon, next week for preschoolers, standard one and two students, following that in stages for the rest of schools. Students in Malaysia. So I'm speaking to President of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association, Dr. Hung Liang Chu, to discuss more about this. If you have any questions or concerns that you'd like to share about your children going back to school, call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll go for a quick break and we'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Hung Liang Chu, President of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association, and we're discussing how to safely reopen schools. If you have any questions or concerns that you'd like to share with us, call us. Our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. We'd also like to hear from you on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Hung, what have you been hearing from parents with schools having been closed and reopened intermittently throughout the pandemic in the whole of last year?
Sorry, I didn't get your question.
That's all right. What have you been hearing from parents with schools being closed and opened intermittently last year? What were their concerns about how their children were doing? And in fact, what concerns have you heard from parents about sending back their kids to school next week?
First, I think we have to build confidence and trust in parents that it is safe to send the children back to school. I've talked to some parents and said, I'm not sending my kid back to school, especially families where they have all the equipment and facilities to do a good virtual class at home. So that's number one. So to build trust and confidence in parents. So that we have to involve the parents from the beginning that the school is well prepared to receive the students. Okay. The other issue is the lack of resources. I think from the last school reopened, we hear and we also read in the newspaper that there were not enough resources provided to the schools, and teachers have to take out their money out of their pocket to buy hand sanitizer for the schools. So these are things that the ministry should actually look into, the government or the community leaders or the member of parliament for their constituency, that schools, especially schools in rural areas, that all these resources are supplied in adequate amount so that the teachers can concentrate on ensuring that these students are being taught and practice the new norm rather than trying to get their money, using their own money to buy these resources that are required. For example, temperature checks. Okay, so where do you get the thermometer? Okay, sanitizer wipes. If you have a morning class and afternoon class, then this alcohol wipes should be provided so that students can actually wipe their tables, chairs, and their own hands before they go home. So that the next group of students that come, the tables and the chairs are cleaned. So that's number one. Number two, I think a lot of the schools, especially the primary schools or schools in the very remote areas, I think the facilities are insufficient. We read in the newspaper, we watch in the social media how teachers actually walk miles and miles to get to their students to provide them with their materials. So they don't have proper facilities to ensure that school reopen is safe, the physical structure of the school is safe, fans are being provided so that ventilation is good, the school is clean rather than dirty and can't be clean. And if you have physical distancing, so a teacher is literally teaching half the class. So you need the double number of teachers teach the same number of students. So teachers are really overwhelmed and overworked if they have to teach to double their work, number one, and also number two, to ensure that students are practicing the new norm. So how do we go about doing that? How do we provide more teachers? Can we recruit retired teachers, volunteers to help up? So those are the one issue. The other issue is the transport to school. We also heard that there is no physical distancing in the school bus.
Yes, we've heard much of that, yes.
So the school bus operator, if they ply the route with only half the students and they cannot increase the school bus fees, then they can't survive because there is not enough income for them to operate. So how do we make sure that students in the school bus do practice physical distancing? So these are the few areas that I have heard of, and I'm not sure what other concerns parents have. I do hope that they call in and maybe we can discuss those issues.
In fact, there's one message from Kevin who is concerned about the risk of children infecting their grandparents if they should get COVID-19 from school, because most kids are taken care of by their grandparents when their parents are at work. Now, how do we mitigate something like this, Dr. Hung?
Yes, this is a concern, as families may have elderly parents, grandparents, or families may have students may come from families who have a family member with cancer or chronic illnesses that they are high risk for COVID. So how do we handle that? So number one, if these are the students, then if there is hybrid mode, then this student can be offered hybrid mode to continue to school from home. And having said that, we also hear a lot of problems with these students who are involved in virtual learning, that they do not have the equipment, they do not have the laptop, smartphone, their four children in the house having virtual class, and they don't have enough smartphone or laptop or tablets to do that. And they, in rural areas, we know that they may have no internet connectivity. And I read from the newspaper that they actually have to go to the oil palm estate to study. So this is very heartbreaking to know. And I hope that the government can actually improve all these infrastructures for future virtual classes. So, and the other issue is this elderly or high-risk members of the family for the students. So we have this community transmission and school transmission, right? So number one, younger children are actually at lower risk of getting infected. Okay, number one. Number two, there's also proof evidence that the younger children, they are not so infective as well. Okay? So number two. Number three, the children usually get their infection from the household. So far, the experience show children get infected from the household rather than from school. But having said that, these data are collected when the schools are being locked down. Okay, so how do we ensure that these elderly people, if the children were to go to school, do not get infected? So this is, again, now indicators for community transmission. Okay? So a school is not an island. A school is also part of the community. So in order for this group of high-risk patients and elderly patients not to get infected, the whole community must involved to make sure that they practice the new norm. That means they do masking, social distancing, physical distancing, hand washing, to make sure that the whole community is safe. So let's say like in US, they actually also zone their infection rates. So if you are in the lower zone, in our country, we have the green, yellow, orange, and red. In US, it's blue, blue, yellow, orange, and red. So in our country, we only know the absolute figures. Whereas in US, they actually report cases per 100,000 over a past 7 days. Mm. And that according to numbers, they say if the is a blue zone, then you have 0 or 9 people infected per 100,000 population over the past 7 days. Then you can have reopening for full in-person learning. So if you are in the red zone, let's say in our country, it's like 41 or more person, absolute numbers. For US, it's like more than 100 or more people infected per 100,000 population person over the past 7 days, which is more accurately reflects the severity of illness. Then they recommend that only maybe the primary school should open. Hmm. And then, and limited opening, some virtual hybrid. And the higher, let's say secondary school, then they should actually do virtual. So these are the recommendations. The other community transmission indicator is like the percentage of positive rates of our COVID test. Okay? Mm. If you're less than 5%, you're fine. If you're more than 5%, 8% or 10%, then you are in a high risk group as well. So these are the community indicators, because old people don't live in isolation. Other members of their families also go out, right?
Yes.
And adults have higher risk of contracting the infection if they don't practice the new norm. So that is in most studies in Europe and US, they do not find that there is increased risk for the members at home. This also being reported in Korea, China, and Japan. But there are certain studies show that there's increase. So I think it's very important that the layered mitigation strategies that is recommended in the school being practiced consistently and all the time.
Mm. And so right now, schools are closed or opened based on whether a particular MCO has been announced in the state. Right now, it's a statewide decision. So, you know, using the example of the US, where they have more specific kind of data in smaller districts, do you think we can do, or would it be worthwhile, would it be better for us to emulate something like that here?
Studies have shown that, as I said, the school is not an island. The school is part of the community. In a community with high transmission rates, if we open school, then the risk of the children getting infection is also relatively higher compared to a community with low infection rates, provided both the school practice the same consistent standard level of norms, the new norms. If you are from a low risk area, but the school do not practice the new norms of mitigation measures, then the risk of infection is also high. Mm. If you are in a high community transmission area, but the school practices strict mitigation measures, then there is also lower risk of infection. So a lot depends on the community, on the schools, all the students, teachers, staff, cleaners, parents, sent children to school. How good is the layered mitigation measures? And what do the school do? What do schools do when a child, let's say, has symptoms in the school? So you should all teachers, the school authority administrators should know that they should quickly isolate the child, contact the PKD, and advise what to do. Parents should be taught if your child is unwell, if the child has fever, don't send the child to schools. So these are the things that are very important that will all help to reduce the risk of infection in schools.
All right. I'm speaking today to the president of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association, Dr. Hang Liang Chu, and we're discussing how we can safely reopen schools. We'll go for a quick break now. When we come back, Dr. Hang, just a little bit more time with you to look at how the vaccination program that's rolling out now could potentially provide another layer of safety. What kind of transition issues could we expect to see in children who will be going back to school soon? Just a couple of more points to discuss with you when we come back from the short break. If you have any questions for Dr. Hang or any concerns that you'd like to raise, call us 0377332900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Hang Liang Chu, president of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association. We're discussing how to safely reopen schools. Schools are set to reopen in stages beginning 1st of March and for some levels and then so on for the rest of the students. Now, if you're a parent or perhaps an educator with concerns about how to keep children safe, children and teachers and safe in school, actually, call us 0377332900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Hang, we do have a question from WhatsApp, and it's related to the COVID-19 vaccination program. So this listener wants to know, do you think teachers should be prioritized in getting the vaccines, and would this help?
Yes. Finally, the COVID vaccine has arrived in this country. So there will be three phases in the distribution of vaccine. So certainly the healthcare providers, the frontliners, will be given vaccine in the phase one or phase 1A. And I strongly believe that teachers and school staff should be given high priority in the early phases of vaccine distribution. So in America, it is recommended that teachers should be placed in phase 1B. So, but having said that, even if the teachers and school staff are vaccinated, schools still need to continue mitigation measures for some time in the unforeseeable future, including masks and physical distancing. So even if teachers are immunized, these mitigation measures should still be in place. And access to vaccination should not be considered a condition for reopening of schools.
What do you mean by that?
That means if the teachers have not received their vaccination, schools should still reopen. Okay. But teachers should surely be given higher priority in the distribution of vaccines. And I urge all teachers, all school staff and administrators should get the vaccine, whatever vaccine that the Malaysian government offers, that we should all take the vaccine, because this vaccine that we are buying are all proven to be safe, reviewed by MPRA.
You know, we've been talking that the whole point of this discussion today is to talk about how we can open schools safely. You know, there are parents who have been eagerly awaiting schools to be reopened as well. But I've also heard some questions and concerns by other quarters saying, well, why be in such a rush to reopen schools? Why not just keep the kids at home anyway where it's safest? In your, from your perspective, Dr. Hang, why is it important for schools to reopen for children?
Schools play a very important part in a child's life. And schools is where children learn academically, where they socialize, where children also have maintained their mental health. And for poor families, children also get their meals from school. And if they get at least one complete meal a day, then at least their health is better maintained. As to now that many families are in financial difficulties, many children in the B4B families are having one meal a day and the meal is incomplete. Okay. So number one. Number two, school should really be the last settings to close after all mitigation measures in the community has been employed, and it should be the first to reopen, and it should remain open in-person teaching over all non-essential business activities. So for Malaysia, we are actually very late in opening schools, and this is actually very harmful to our children for all that I've mentioned. So we should really open schools first before we open restaurants, hair salon, and whatnot. You know, schools should reopen first, and schools should be the last to close over all non-essential business and activities. So that is how it is. So if the school actually practices and implements all the layered mitigation strategies, school is as safe as the community, unless nobody's in the family goes out. But if any person were to go out into the community, it is as good as children going to the school.
Yeah.
So the risk is the same if we practice good mitigation strategies.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it comes back to all those protocols that is repeatedly being drummed into us, isn't it? Washing hands, yes. Wearing masks, physical distancing. Dr. Hang, what kind of transition issues could we expect to see in children going back to school after being at home for so long? And, you know, any tips on how parents can manage those?
Children, I suspect many children will drop out from schools after 1 whole year of not going to schools. And by going to school and with the new norms, children will, especially primary school children, I think primary school children will have lots of difficulty adapting to schools as well. And teachers should pay more attention to this group of children, number one. Number two, the progress in their academic performance may not have been uniform because some families may not have the facilities for virtual learning, and this group of children may have fell far behind their other colleagues, their other friends. So this group of children will again need special attention so that they can cope in schools. And social distancing, physical distancing, the new pods that the school were to introduce to children, special meal times, it may be quite stressful to children as well.
Mm.
And then when they go to school, they couldn't interact with their friends well because you need physical distancing. So these are all stress to children. Schools should have in place counselors, maybe welfare workers, and school can engage volunteers, Parent Teacher Association, to actually help all these students, let's say secondary school children, who may have gone into depression during this time that they are always in school, you know. So these are the things that the school should look at as to how to help these students when they get back to schools.
So finally, Dr. Hang, do you have a final message that will reassure parents and kids as they are preparing to go back to school next week?
The first is schools are important for children, and schools should prepare well according to the Ministry of Health Education guidelines so that school is safe, and parents should have trust and confidence that school is safe, that they should send back their children to school. Number two, schools should remain open and should be the last to close if there is any outbreaks over non-essential business. And first to open over non-essential business and activities.
Mm.
So the in-person teaching should be prioritized over all extracurricular activities, including sports and school events in the school. So the emphasis should be on in-person teaching or instructions rather than on school activities and extracurricular activities to minimize the risk of transmission in schools.
So on that note, does that mean that perhaps sports and all of that should be stopped for now?
For sports that is team, with many people involved, that you cannot have physical distancing, that sports should not be encouraged.
Mm.
and for all social events resulting from that sports should not be held in the, by the schools. And all school events should not be held. But if you want to have children, it's also important that children should have physical activities. They can have free running in the field where they can have physical distancing. Sports that do not involve team play, let's say if you play badminton alone from one side and the other side, it should be safe in an open field. Okay, things like table tennis, they are all safe. So, but netball, football,
contact sports,
where they, you have contact sports, and these are not safe sports to be held during this time.
All right.
And when the children are having sports or physical activities, ideally they should not wear their mask. So for that, physical distancing is very important.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Hung. I've been speaking to Dr. Hung Liang Chu, president of the Malaysian Pediatrics Association, on how we can safely reopen schools. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.